Kirk, Spock and McCoy head a five strong landing party to a pleasant landscape of green grass, colorful plants and clear pools of water.
No life form readings, Captain. Continuing scan.
Well, somebody sent a distress call.
No sign of the spaceship, no sign of debris.
I am getting readings on small metallic objects, Captain. It's possible the ship was destroyed in space and the survivors proceeded here in a shuttlecraft.
But where are they?
Captain, I'm getting a reading now. Two human forms at bearing 300 Mark 7.
Confirmed.
A man and woman approach the landing party. The man looks about 50 and wears a salmon-colored jumpsuit. The woman, dressed in a tight-fitting blue jumpsuit completely cut away at the back, is younger, with a blonde bun and a severely beautiful but expressionless face. Both wear belts, with a small black device attached to the buckle.
I'm Captain James T. Kirk of the Starship Enterprise. We came in answer to your distress call.
It was very kind of you to respond so quickly, Captain. Now, you will surrender your ship to me.
Kirk raises his eyebrows.
You have a very strange sense of humor, Mr.
The man and the woman press the devices on their belts. The landing party become paralyzed, except for their eyes.
I am Rojan of Kelva. I am your commander from this moment on.
He goes over to Spock and McCoy.
Any efforts to resist us or to escape will be severely punished. Soon we and you will leave this galaxy forever. You humans must face the end of your existence as you have known it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek. Created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. By Any Other Name. Teleplay by DC Fontana and Joran Bixby. Story by Joran Bixby. Directed by Mark Daniels. The alien woman takes the landing party's communicators and phasers from them.
You are all paralyzed by a selective field that neutralizes nerve impulses to the voluntary muscles. We can control you at will. I will now release you.
Say.
Captain.
It's all right, John.
Interesting. A neural field.
Yes. Radiating from a central projector.
What do you want?
Your ship, Captain Kirk. It will serve us well in the long voyage that is to come.
Voyage where?
To your neighboring galaxy, which you call Andromeda.
Andromeda? Why?
It is our home.
What brings you here?
Within 10 millennia, high radiation levels in our galaxy will make life there impossible. So the Kelvin Empire sent forth ships to explore other galaxies. To search for one which our race could conquer and occupy.
I'm sorry, this galaxy is already occupied.
Captain, you think you are unconquerable and your ship impregnable. But while we've talked, the capture has already begun.
Something penetrating from the planet.
Increase power to shields.
A Kelvin man materializes in the upper-level engineering control gallery, paralyzes the man at the control desk, then all the other engineers, and takes over.
It's dead, sir. All major power disabled.
Sound red alert.
Red alert. All personnel, man your battle stations, go to red alert.
A Kelvin woman appears in life support control and paralyzes the officer at the controls.
Engineering, come in.
Life support, come in.
A Kelvin appears on the bridge. he paralyzes Scotty, Chekhov, Uhura, and the whole bridge crew, steps unhurriedly up to the gallery, and opens a comms channel on Uhura's console.
Rhea, Tomar, report.
Life support control secure.
Engineering is secure.
Rojan, Hainar here.
Report, Hainar.
The ship is ours. We control the bridge, engineering, and life support systems.
Proceed with your orders.
Kirk comes towards Rojan. The woman immediately moves her hands to the device on her belt.
What's the point in capturing my ship? Even at maximum warp, the Enterprise couldn't get to the Andromeda Galaxy for thousands of years.
Captain, we will modify its engines in order to produce velocities far beyond the reach of your science. The journey between galaxies will take less than 300 of your years.
Fascinating. Intergalactic travel requiring only 300 years. That is a leap far beyond anything man has yet accomplished.
You made a voyage of 300 years?
Our ships were of multi-generation design. We were born in the intergalactic void. We shall die there during our return journey.
And our mission will be completed by a commander who is my descendant.
What happened to your ship?
There is an energy barrier at the rim of your galaxy.
Yes, I know. We've been there.
We managed to break through it with great difficulty. Our ship was destroyed. We barely managed to escape in a life craft. And now, we have the means begin our journey back to Andromeda.
Why use our vessel? Why not transmit a message to your galaxy?
No form of transmission can penetrate the barrier.
Rojan, there's no reason to do this by force. Let's take your problem to the Federation. Research expeditions have cataloged hundreds of uninhabited planets in this galaxy suitable for colonization.
We do not colonize. We conquer. We rule. There is no other way for us.
In other words, the galaxy isn't big enough for both of us.
The Federation has handled foreign invasions before.
Captain, we can control a Federation as easily as we can control you. The fate of the inferior in any galaxy.
The man from the bridge materializes.
All is proceeding according to plan, Rojan.
Galinda, take them to the holding area. We'll keep you and your party here, Captain. Your crew will undoubtedly wish to cooperate with us if they understand that you are hostages.
Move there.
The landing party are taken to a nearby cell carved from rock with a barred door.
Tomar has examined the ship. The modifications are underway.
Space again, Hainar. I do not think we could have kept our sanity living too long on this accursed planet.
It is an undisciplined environment. One cannot control it. Yet there are things of interest.
Yes, but disturbing. These shells in which we've encased ourselves, they have such heightened senses. To feel, to hear, to smell. How do humans manage to exist in these fragile cases?
Since the ship was designed to sustain these forms, we have little choice.
Rojan looks around.
At least we'll be away from all of this openness. Now, this is too strange for us, Hainar. We're creatures of outer space. And soon, we will be safe in the comforting closeness of walls.
Fascinating material. Similar to dibernium, but considerably more dense. I doubt even phaser fire could disturb its molecular structure.
All right, we can't break out. There must be another way.
Captain, what do they want from us? What kind of people are they?
That's a very good question.
They're registered as human.
No, Doctor. More than that, they registered as perfect human life forms. I recall noting their readings were almost classic textbook responses. Most curious.
Spock, what are the odds in such absolute duplication of life forms in another galaxy?
The chances are very much against it.
Captain.
Kalindra is by the door. The security guard comes over to Kirk.
However perfect they are, there don't seem to be very many of them. Why don't we...
They have the paralysis field. Rojan mentioned something about a central projector.
Yes. If we could put that out of operation, we might have a chance.
Gentlemen, I'm constrained to point out we do not even know what this projector looks like.
Those devices on the belts might indicate the source of the force field.
Possible. I would have to have one to examine.
Oh, you'll have one, sir. If I have to rip one of the Kelvins apart to get it...
Jay, you'll get your chance, but you'll do it under orders.
Yes, sir.
Spock. On a mini R7, you were able to trick the guard by a Vulcan mind probe.
As I recall, Captain, I led him to believe we had escaped.
Do you think you can do it again?
I shall attempt it.
Spock goes over to the rocky wall of the cell, close to the barred doorway. Kalinda stands just beyond it. He places his fingers on the rock. As Spock concentrates, Kalinda blinks and her normally expressionless face becomes uncertain. Suddenly, Spock is hurled to the ground. Kalinda comes to the door and the horizontal bars slide open. As she steps inside, Kirk karate chops her. She collapses unconscious. He picks her up, brings her further into the cave, lays her on the ground, and takes the paralyzing device from her belt. Kirk and McCoy help Spock to his feet.
You all right?
Yes, sir. We'll be all right, Captain, but we must hurry.
As soon as they all run outside, Haenar paralyzes Kirk. The others stop in their tracks. Rogen comes up, takes Kalinda's device from Kirk's hand, and hands it back to her as she comes out of the rocky cell.
This cannot go unpunished. Haenar!
He points to the tall black security guard, Lieutenant Shea.
That one. Take him aside.
Haenar leads the lieutenant away.
Kalinda? The female.
Kalinda leads the dark-haired yeoman Thompson away. She halts beside Kirk.
Captain.
Go.
Kalinda leads her over to stand beside Lieutenant Shea. Rogen turns back to Kirk.
As a leader, you realize the importance of discipline. I need you and these other specialists, but those two are unnecessary.
Thompson and Shea look at Kirk, frightened.
I'm responsible. Let them go.
I think we're somewhat alike, Captain. Each of us cares less for his own safety than for the lives of his command. We feel pain when others suffer for our mistakes. Your punishment shall be to watch them die. Captain? Proceed, Haenar.
Haenar steps away from the two frightened Enterprise crew and presses a button on the device at his belt. In a flash of light, Thompson and Shea are transformed into two small white polyhedrons no bigger than a fist. Haenar picks them up.
Bring them to me.
Haenar takes them to Rogen. He takes one in each hand and goes to stand beside Kirk, who's deeply shocked.
This is the essence of what they were. The flesh and brain and what you call the personality. Distilled down into these compact shapes. Once crushed.
Rogen crushes one of the polyhedrons in his hand. It crumbles into white powder. Kirk, Spock, and McCoy look on, horrified.
This person is dead.
Rogen indicates the pile of white powder and fragments at his feet.
However,
he tosses the other one away.
That one can be restored. Haenar?
Haenar touches the device at his belt and the polyhedron turns back into Lieutenant Shea. Kirk crouches down and picks up the white powder that is all that is left of Yeoman Thompson, cupping it in his hands, his eyes filled with grief.
Captain's log, stardate 4657.5. Work is proceeding on the Enterprise as my crew is forced to make the required changes in the ship for intergalactic travel. I can't forget the picture of Yeoman Thompson crushed to a handful of dust.
Spock, are you sure you're all right?
Yes, quite all right, Doctor.
Now, you didn't look very well when you broke that mind touch.
I did not break it, Doctor. I was thrown away by something I've never experienced before.
What was it?
A series of bizarre and exotic images bursting on my mind and consciousness. Colors, shapes,
mathematical equations, fused and blurred. I've been attempting to isolate them, but so far I've been able to recall clearly only one. Immense beings. 100 limbs which resemble tentacles. Minds of such control and capacity that each limb is capable of performing a different function.
You mean that's what the Kelvins really are?
Undoubtedly.
Well, if they look that way normally, why did they adapt themselves to our bodies?
Perhaps practicality. They chose the Enterprise as the best vessel for the trip. Immense beings with 100 tentacles would have difficulty with the turbolift. We've got to stop them. We outnumber them. Their only hold on us is the paralysis field.
Well, that's enough. One wrong move and they jam all our neural circuits.
Jam? Spock, if you reverse the circuits on McCoy's neuroanalyzer, can you set up a counter field to jam the paralysis projector?
I'm dubious of the possibilities of success, Captain. The medical equipment is not designed to put out a great deal of power. The polarized elements would burn out quickly.
Is there a chance at all?
A small one.
We'll take it. You and Bones have to get up to the ship.
How?
Yes.
He looks around the cave, then at Spock.
Mr. Spock. You're sick.
I assure you, Captain, I'm in perfect health.
No, you're not. Dr. McCoy has given you a thorough examination, and you're ill. In fact, if you don't get to the sick bay, you're going to die.
It's a good idea, Jim, but anyone looking at him can tell he's healthy.
Vulcans have the ability to place themselves in a kind of trance, a complete relaxation of every part of the mind and the body.
We find it more restful to the body than your so-called vacation.
Can you do it now and come out of it in the sick bay, say, in a half an hour?
It will take me a moment to prepare.
Go ahead.
Spock closes his eyes and puts the fingers of one hand to his forehead, then takes them away, looks up, and slowly topples. Kirk and McCoy catch him. They sit him down on a rock, and McCoy takes his pulse.
Jim, his heartbeat really is slow. His pulse is practically non-existent.
Anar! Anar!
He now comes to the cell door.
What do you want, human?
Mr. Spock is ill. The doctor thinks he may be dying.
Hanar looks at Spock suspiciously.
This illness came on him rather suddenly. Is it not unusual?
He's a Vulcan. They don't react like humans.
He may die. If I can get him up to sickbay, there's a chance he'll live.
Stand away from the door.
The horizontal bars slide aside. The dark-haired Kelvin comes into the cell and looks at McCoy, who's stopping Spock from falling.
I will have you beamed aboard.
Do what you can with him, Bob.
Later, McCoy and a Kelvin stretch a Spock into sick bay.
Doctor, what happened?
Prepare 2 cc's of Stokoline.
Stokoline? But doctor, that's...
Don't argue, nurse. Just get it.
Nurse Chapel goes into the next room. The Kelvin watches as McCoy runs a scanner over Spock's chest and looks up at the biomonitor. Nurse Chapel returns with a hypospray.
This may be the turning point. Prepare another shot.
But, Doc...
Please, nurse, just follow orders, will you?
Nurse Chapel takes a deep breath and goes. Spock opens his eyes. McCoy frowns at him, and he quickly closes them again. Christine brings the hypospray.
There, that should do it. Just let him rest now.
He turns to the Kelvin.
You see, it's a flare-up of Regillian Cassava fever. He suffered from it about 10 years ago, and it recurs every now and then. There's no danger if he gets medication in time. He'll be all right in a couple of hours.
Very well. I will inform Rojan. You will stay here.
McCoy nods sagely as the Kelvin goes. On the planet's surface...
What do you want from me now?
We will beam aboard the vessel shortly. I wish you to understand your duties.
My duty is to stop you in any way I can.
You will obey.
Or you will kill more of my people.
Captain Kirk, I cannot believe that you do not understand the importance of my mission. We Kelvins have a code of honor. Harsh, demanding. It calls for much from us. And much from those whom we conquer. You have been conquered. I respect your devotion to your duty, but I cannot permit it to interfere with mine.
These are lovely. Captain Kirk,
What is it you call them?
Flowers. I don't know the variety.
Our memory tapes tell us of such things on Kelvin. Crystals that form with such rapidity, they seem to grow. They look like this fragile thing somewhat. We call them Sashir.
A rose by any other name.
Captain?
A quote from a great human poet, Shakespeare. That which we call a rose by any other name, it smells sweet.
Later on the Enterprise, Rojan and Kalinda stand behind Kirk in the captain's chair. The female Kelvin who took over life support is at the helm.
Drea has computed and laid a course for Kelvin, Captain.
We've jumped to warp 8.
And we'll go faster yet. Increase speed to warp 11.
Chekhov looks round at Kirk.
Increase speed to warp 11, Mr. Chekhov.
On course and proceeding as planned. We will approach the barrier within an hour.
Very well.
Kirk gets up from the captain's chair and goes over to Rojan and Kalinda.
Rojan, I'm going to sick bay. My first officer is taken ill.
Yes, I was informed. You may go.
In the medical lab, Spock, Scotty and McCoy are all at work. Kirk comes in.
Anything?
Located the power source, Captain. It's installed in engineering.
We're just going to jam it.
I've tied in all the lab computers. That'll give it a bit more power to push with.
Scotty and Spock creep up the ladder into the upper level gallery of the engineering section. There's a device like a large silver jelly mold sitting on top of the main control desk.
This is it. Now all we have to do...
Whatever it is we must do, it is impossible.
Why?
This material surrounding the projector is the same as I discovered on the planet. Readings indicate it is impervious to any of our weapons. We cannot penetrate the casing to get to the machine.
That's it, then.
There is one other possibility, Mr. Scott. The final decision, of course, must be the captain's, but I believe we must have it ready for him. The Enterprise is propelled by matter-antimatter reactors. The barrier we must traverse is negative energy.
I see what you're getting at. I can't say I like it.
Nor I. But it must be made available to the captain.
Scotty sits down at the console, and he and Spock start making adjustments.
Captain Kirk, to the bridge, please.
Kirk meets Scotty and Spock on their way to the bridge. As the lift climbs, he looks at them.
Well?
Impossible, Captain. The power source is protected by a material we cannot breach, even with our phasers.
Kirk takes in Scotty's anxious expression.
Mr. Scott and I have prepared the means for the only logical alternative available to us.
What alternative?
The barrier we must penetrate is composed of negative energy.
I have opened the control valves to the matter-antimatter nacelles. On your signal, I will flood them with positive energy.
What?
When we engage the barrier, the ship will explode. The Kelvins will be stopped here.
And so will we.
Are you mad? I can't just...
Take your places, gentlemen. We're approaching the barrier.
Kirk, Scotty and Spock step out of the lift. A pink and violet cloud shimmers in the forward view screen. Kirk takes the command chair and glances over at Spock at the science station. Spock looks back impassively. Kirk turns to Scotty, grim-faced at the engineering console. Scotty's fingers are over the controls, ready to flood the matter-antimatter nacelles. The Enterprise races towards the barrier at incredible speed.
Captain's log, stardate 4658.9. With the Enterprise under control of the Kelvins, we are approaching the energy barrier at the edge of our galaxy. Spock and Scotty have devised a suicide plan to stop the Kelvins. They have rigged the ship to explode on my signal.
Reading, Spock.
Sensors indicate density negative, radiation negative, energy negative.
Kirk, strangely indecisive, looks at the view screen, then at Scotty.
Instruments off the dial, Captain. We are in contact with the barrier.
Hold tight, hull temperature rising, sir.
Over 2,000 degrees now. Sir!
Scotty and Spock glare meaningfully at Kirk.
Hold your position.
Scotty punches switches on his panel, closing the nacelle valves. Spock raises a puzzled eyebrow and turns back to his scanners. The bridge rocks as the Enterprise hits the barrier. The bridge crew hang on, shielding their eyes as the view screen fills with dazzling white and violet light. The Enterprise breaks free and heads towards a distant spiral galaxy.
We made it.
Instruments returning to normal, Captain.
All decks report damage and casualties.
Several systems out, sir. Operating on emergency backup, non-effect flight procedure.
Life support systems sustaining on emergency.
I'll have a full report on ship status for you in a moment, sir.
Your people are most efficient, Captain. Thank you. So are yours.
Hanar, start the neutralizing operation.
Kirk jumps up as Hanar steps into the lift.
What neutralizing operation?
You humans are troublesome for us. We needed you to get us through the barrier. But there aren't enough of us to efficiently guard all of you all of the time. Further, the food synthesizers cannot manufacture enough food for the entire journey. We are therefore neutralizing all non-essential personnel.
No.
The procedure is already underway. Now, as to bridge personnel... Drea?
The brown-haired Kelvin woman at the helm steps up from the well to the gallery and puts her hands on the device at her belt.
We have no need for communication.
Uhura looks up at him, horrified. Rojan presses his device. Uhura changes into a white polyhedron.
And since Drea is capable of handling the ship from here on...
He turns to Chekhov. Chekhov is also transformed. Drea presses her device. The female yeoman and the two lieutenants next to her are transformed into polyhedrons. Rojan looks at the horrified captain standing next to him and turns away unconcerned. Kirk steps down into the well and bows over the captain's chair, looking as though he might vomit. The Enterprise heads on towards the distant galaxy. Later, Kirk walks through a corridor on one of the lower decks. He turns a corner. The floor is littered with small white polyhedrons. He turns back. Rojan is standing in his way.
Do you not agree that this is a better thing for them than exploding the ship as your engineer had thought to do? We detected it, of course. Tomar has devised a mechanism to prevent any further tampering. Please accept your situation, Captain. It will make things much less painful for you.
Kirk strides away from Rojan without a word. He comes into one of the recreation and canteen rooms. Scotty, Spock, and McCoy are at a table eating.
Is this all?
I have reviewed ship's personnel, Captain. It appears we four are the only ones the Kelvins consider essential.
Scotty tells me that you could have destroyed the ship and the barrier. Why didn't you?
I couldn't.
If that was our only chance to stop
it. I didn't think it was.
Jim!
Bones, that's enough.
Jim, I saw them reduce four of my doctors and nurses into those little...
They've reduced the whole crew!
Tomar, the tall, dark-haired Kelvin who took over at engineering, comes and looks down at them.
I do not understand why you take the trouble to consume this bulk material to sustain yourselves. We have ascertained that these... contain all the nutritional elements.
Before you condemn it, why don't you try it?
I believe I will. Assist me.
It's your idea, Doctor. Go ahead.
All right, I'll show you how to work the selector.
McCoy leads Tomar over to the food synthesizers and inserts a disc. The door opens. McCoy takes out the tray of multicolored food and sets it down at a table. The Kelvin in his dusky pink overalls sits, and tentatively puts a forkful of food into his mouth as McCoy watches.
Sir, why don't we try again to knock out the paralysis projector? I know the casing looks impenetrable, but I may be able to do something.
Even if we could, it's out of the question. We need that projector to bring our people back to human form.
Then how will we stop the Kelvins?
Captain.
Spock indicates Tomar.
If I could, I'm delighted.
McCoy comes and sits back down with the others. Spock looks at Tomar and clasps his hands together pensively.
Most curious.
What is?
The isolated glimpses of things I saw when I touched Kalinda's mind are beginning to coalesce in my consciousness. The Kelvins have superior intellectual capacity. To achieve it, they've apparently sacrificed anything which would tend to distract them. Perceptive senses such as taste, touch, smell, and, of course, emotions.
But then Tomar shouldn't be enjoying the taste of his food.
Yes, quite correct, Captain. But they have taken human form and are therefore having human reaction.
Kirk's eyes narrow. McCoy looks over at Tomar, scoffing his food.
If he keeps reacting like that, he's going to need a diet.
If they all respond to stimulation of the senses, then maybe we can distract them. They can't have been able to handle the senses yet. If we can confuse them enough, we can get those devices from their belts.
That seems reasonable.
All right. It may be our only chance. Look for any way to stimulate the senses.
I can think of one way right off.
Scotty goes over to Tomar.
Lad, you're going to need something to wash that down with. Have you ever tried any Saurian brandy?
Tomar shakes his head. Later, in sickbay, McCoy examines Haynar.
I don't know about that.
Please articulate.
Well, that bite of yours is a bit anemic. Comes from taking food and pills instead of solid sustenance.
What are you doing?
Gonna give you a shot. High potency vitamin concentrate. You'll need 3 a day for a few days. And eat some solid food, will you?
Haynar looks up at him, mystified. In Scotty's quarters, Tomar drains his glass and pours out the last few drops from the bottle of Saurian brandy. Scotty raises his eyebrows.
No more.
Kirk enters Kalinda's quarters. She gets up from her desk.
Am I disturbing you?
What is it you wish?
I wish to apologize.
I don't understand, Captain.
For hitting you, I'm sorry.
That is not necessary. You attempted to escape as we would have.
Yes, well, I don't usually go around beating up beautiful women.
Why not?
Well, there are better things for men and women to do.
Like what?
Kirk looks at her in surprise. He touches her collarbone by her left shoulder.
Is this where I hit you?
No, the other side.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He kisses it better.
Is that better?
Better? Was it intended as a remedy?
He turns her to face him.
This is.
He cups her face in his hands, pulls her close, and gives her a lingering kiss.
Is there some significance to this action?
Kirk looks deflated.
Well, among humans, it's meant to express warmth and love.
Oh, you are trying to seduce me. I have been studying you.
Me?
All humans. This business of love. You have devoted much literature to it. Why do you build such a mystique around a simple biological function?
Kirk looks lost.
We enjoy it.
The literature?
Kalinda, I'm sorry I brought up the whole subject.
Do you really regard this touching of the lips as pleasurable?
I did.
Curious. Let me try.
She kisses him. Rojan enters. He looks at Kirk and Kalinda, puzzled.
Is there some problem, Captain?
Not when I came in.
Kirk goes.
What did he want here?
He came to apologize for hitting me. Apparently, it involves some peculiar touching contact.
In what manner?
The beautiful young blonde puts her arm around Rojan's neck and kisses him inexpertly on the lips.
Very odd creatures, these humans.
Tomar drains a second bottle. He clinks glasses with Scotty and they drink. Tomar holds out the empty bottle.
You have more?
Scotty looks at it.
What, not like this?
Well, anything.
Scotty lurches drunkenly into the next room. In the rec room, Spock and Rojan play chess.
Yes, humans are very peculiar. I often find them unfathomable. But an interesting psychological study. Well, I do not understand this business of pressing with the lips to apologize.
I believe you're referring to a kiss. But it is my understanding that such apologies are usually exchanged between people who have some affection for each other.
Kalinda has no affection for Captain Kirk.
Spock takes one of Rojan's chessmen.
Your game is off. Are you disturbed by the incident?
Why should I be disturbed?
You've known Kalinda for some time. She's a Kelvin, as you are. Among humans, I've found the symptoms you are displaying usually indicate jealousy.
I have no reason for such a reaction. Kalinda's a female, nothing more.
Captain Kirk seems to find her quite attractive.
Well, of course she is.
You are not jealous?
No.
Nor upset?
Certainly not.
Rojan takes his next move. Spock takes his.
Checkmate.
Scotty staggers from his bedroom with another bottle.
I found this in Ganner room. Ganner mirror.
What is it?
Well, it's green.
Kalinda lets her hair down and looks at her reflection. Rojan comes in.
Kalinda, I've been thinking.
Yes?
I do not wish you to fraternize with any of the humans.
Why not?
Well, they offer such strange ideas. They're not meant for us, not for Kelvins.
Have you given this order to the others?
No, and I wish you to particularly avoid Captain Kirk.
I will not. You have told me over and over again, humans are no threat to us. We are superior. I will do as I please.
You will do as I say, or I will neutralize your Captain Kirk and all the other humans as well.
He's gripping her hard by the arms. They both look down at his hands. McCoy gives Hanar another shot.
How many more of these?
Well, now, let's see. You've had three shots. I think you better stay on them for a few days, and then we'll see how you're responding.
I see no reason for you to refer to yourself in the plural.
He goes. McCoy shrugs to himself. Tomar.
You have more?
All I have is a bottle of very, very, very old scotch.
Whiskey!
Well, I will try it.
I'll get it.
Tearfully, Scotty reaches into a suit of armor.
Oh, I was saving you for...
What?
Never mind. Here's your glass.
Kirk, Spock, and McCoy meet in the rec room.
Thing is, I can't tell if we're getting anywhere.
And I haven't seen Scotty in hours.
We haven't seen Tomar either. But my man Hanar is getting more irritable by the minute. I'm giving him shots of formazine. It should have him climbing the walls.
Rojan has exhibited symptoms of jealousy.
I would like to speak with you, Captain.
Kirk gulps.
Doctor, I'm due for another injection of Stokoline. Stokoline.
Reluctantly, McCoy leaves.
You will pardon us.
Kirk folds his arms. Kalinda seems timid.
You had something to say?
Yes. This cultural mystique surrounding the biological function.
Yes.
You realize humans are overly preoccupied with the subject.
Yes, we do think a great deal about it.
She lowers her eyes.
I've done some supplemental reading on it, and...
You have a question?
Yes. I was wondering, would you please apologize to me again?
Kirk grins lasciviously. Rogen and Drea are on the bridge.
Rogen, I want to talk to you.
Very well.
First, I do not like the way responsibility and duty has been portioned out to us.
It's the way your duties have always been
that assigned. That is my second quarrel with you.
Einar!
Further, I do not care much for the way you run this ship.
Einar, confine yourself to your quarters.
Einar storms back into the lift. Rogen thumps the arm of the command chair furiously. Drea turns round and gives him an odd look. In the rec room, Kirk finishes apologizing to Kalinda.
Rogen has forbidden me to see you.
Yes, that's too bad. Why do you defy him?
It is not a question of defiance. We were told to find out everything we could about you.
Mm-hmm. Well, how's the research going?
I need some more experiments.
She kisses him passionately, lips parted.
Mr. Spock, you were not ordered to the bridge. What is your purpose here?
Automatic sensors and various other recording devices require monitoring and periodic adjustments.
Very well, proceed.
Spock goes to his station on the gallery and sits down. Rogen looks over at him pensively and gets up from the captain's chair.
Have you seen Captain Kirk?
If you wish, I shall call him to the bridge.
No, I was wondering where he was.
I left him in the recreation room.
He was alone then?
No, Kalinda was with him. She seemed anxious to speak to him.
I told her to stay away from him.
It would appear, sir, that you have little control over her. Or perhaps Captain Kirk has more.
Rogen turns stiffly away and leaves the bridge. Scotty pours his last drop of whiskey into Tomar's glass. The Kelvin drains it.
Very interesting. But I feel rather strange.
His head drops forward and hits the table. He sits bolt upright and slides to the floor. Scotty kisses the whiskey bottle.
We did it, you and me. Put him right under the table.
Scotty gets uncertainly to his feet, staggers over to the comatose Kelvin, and pulls the device from his belt.
I'll take this to the captain.
He gets as far as the door, slumps back against the wall, and slowly slides to the floor. Rogen bursts into the rec room.
Kalinda, I told you to avoid this human.
I did not wish to.
I am your commander.
That's not enough, Rogen.
You did this to her. Corrupted her, turned her away from...
If you can't keep her, that's not my problem.
You will release her.
Kirk slaps Rogen hard, twice. Enraged, Rogen leaps on him.
Help!
He throws Kirk across a table, drags him to his feet, and pins him to the wall. Rogen's hand smothers Kirk's mouth. Kirk forces it away.
Want to use a paralyzer?
Rogen throws him across another table. Kirk drop kicks Rogen in the chest, drags him to his feet, and pins him to a table.
Well, I was taking your woman away from you. You're jealous. You're trying to kill me with your bare hands. Would a Kelvin do that? Would he have to? You're reacting with the emotions of a human. You are a human. No, I cannot be. I'm stimulating him.
McCoy and Spock throw Kirk back into the fight. Kirk pins Rogen in an arm lock.
You have no choice.
McCoy and Spock watch, curious.
To use this ship, you have to use our form. And now you're stuck with it, you and your descendants, for the next 300 years.
You fool! These bodies are tools, we're gonna kill it!
Look what's happened to you for the short time you've been exposed to us. What do you think will happen in 3 centuries? When the ship gets to Kelva,
The people on it will be human. They'll be aliens. Enemies. Oh, we have a duty. A mission. To accomplish any way we can.
Your mission is to find new worlds for your people to live in. You can still do that. We can bring this problem to the Federation. There are many planets in this galaxy that can be inhabited.
You would really do that? You would extend welcome to invaders?
No. But we would welcome friends.
Rajan, you are only a link in a chain, following an order given 300 years ago. This is an opportunity for you to establish a destiny of your own.
The anguish slowly fading from his eyes, Rojan nods.
Perhaps. Perhaps it could be done.
A robot ship could be sent to Kelva with a Federation proposal.
But if we retain this form, where could we find a place?
Seems to me that little planet you were on is kind of nice.
Rojan turns to Kalinda.
You? You would wish to remain with him?
He's most interesting, but I wish to go with you. I believe I owe you an apology.
She places her hands on Rojan's shoulders and kisses him with considerable expertise. Spock and McCoy watch critically.
It's most pleasurable.
Rojan considers.
Yeah. Very curious.
You see, Rojan, being human does have certain advantages, being able to appreciate the beauty of a flower or a woman.
Still somewhat piqued, Rojan goes over to a comms screen.
Bridge, this is Rojan.
Yes, Commander.
I'm returning command of the ship to Captain Kirk. You will follow his orders.
Sir?
Turn the ship around. We're going home.
McCoy nudges Spock in the ribs and grins. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.